Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, August 27th. Young Odessan places in national cooking competition. Olivia Adams took her cooking to a new level by participating in the K-12 National Cook-Off through Texas Online Preparatory School, or TOPS. The 12-year-old Odessan went to Arlington, Virginia, at the Kitchen of Purpose, for the event and was one of six finalists. Judges included David Ho, winner of Food Network's Chopped, Isabel Koss, renowned pastry chef, and Daniela Hurtado, director of programs at Kitchen of Purpose. Adams placed fourth overall. First place won $1,000, second place won $500, third place $350, and fourth, fifth, and sixth got gift baskets. Her mother, Stephanie Neer, said the email about Adams being selected went to their spam. But then they got a phone call about it. Adams had limited time to prepare, but the contest went well. The first competition was online, and then the second one was in person. The online one was you just made a dish and you submitted three photos and step-by-step process of how you made it. You submitted that, and then judges picked six people from 350 students that had entered. They picked the best six, and we all went to Virginia to do a final competition, Adams said. Neer said it was a timed competition and a blind draw for a protein and a side, and out of that she had to create her dish. From that moment to cooking, plating, and presenting to the judge, Olivia had 60 minutes to create her entree. During that, there are camera crews all around and an interviewer. Neer said parents couldn't be in the room with the competitors, but they could watch on a screen. Olivia also took time to help her competitors, Neer said. She made beef tenderloin with mashed potatoes, carrots, and asparagus for the main dish, and a no-bake cheesecake for dessert. When I got the potatoes, I knew I had to make mashed potatoes because I love them, and I know how to make them really good. My mom has a special secret we put in them. For the vegetables, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do with them, if I wanted to boil them or fry them in a pan. So I decided to steam them, but I couldn't find a steamer, so then I boiled them instead, Olivia said. The steak was easy. I just had to cook it and put it on a plate, she added. She surprised herself by finishing 25 minutes early. Her mom said the judges told her the steak was perfectly cooked and seasoned great. They loved the mashed potatoes as well. The only thing she was dinged for was soggy vegetables because the interviewer started talking to her. Neer said Ho complimented her on her timing even with everything going on in the kitchen. Adam said she has enjoyed cooking from the time she was little. She has a brother, Austin Neer. The whole family's into cooking. I cook everything at home. I don't eat fast food. We grow our own food. I was born and raised on a farm before I came here. I owned a restaurant for many years, so she's just grown up around it. She gets in the kitchen and she creates her own dishes. She's really good at doing Oriental food. Not much of a baker yet, but we're not big on sweets, Stephanie said. That was a big challenge for her. The second round was the dessert challenge, and they had 30 minutes to make that dish, Stephanie said. It was very good. At first, it was a little difficult adjusting to the difference between how brick and mortar was to online, but all the teachers there were very helpful to getting caught up in all the work I needed to do, Adams said. Adams said she would like to work her way up and hopefully own a restaurant someday. She enjoys cooking because you can do everything with it. When you go to a restaurant, you don't really know how your food is made. But being able to open your fridge and grab just a few ingredients and then cook it and turn it into something completely different than what you could have thought it was when you first saw ingredients is really fun. making your own food and knowing how it is made. And the work and love that went into making it always is amazing, Adams said. Pfluger issues statement on Texas cleaning voter rolls. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, released a statement following Governor Greg Abbott's announcement that 1 million ineligible voters have been purged from the voter rolls in the state of Texas. "The integrity of our elections is paramount to the future of our country," said Congressman August Pfluger. "I commend the state of Texas for cleaning up our voter rolls and ensuring that only legal votes are cast in our state. House Republicans have worked to enact legislation at the federal level that empowers all 50 states to purge their voter rolls of non-citizens, illegal aliens, and foreign nationals." Traffic alert: Loop 250 and Avenue A is open. Loop 250 and Avenue A is now open for use. It is important for users of this intersection to watch for new signage, yield and stop signs, and traffic patterns as shown on the attached graphic. UTPB events on tap. University of Texas Permian Basin has several events coming up. The Bright Star Memorial Dedication and Blood Drive from 7:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. August 29th at the Sports Complex parking lot off Loop 338. Schedule your appointment. The Bright Star Memorial Dedication at 8 p.m. August 29th at the Bright Star Memorial Plaza, Park and Sports Complex parking lot off Loop 338. It is open to the community. The first UTPB football game, home game of the season, free admission and tailgating, August 31st at Ratliff Stadium. Gates open at noon. Falcon walk when players arrive. Spirit teams and band performance at 4 p.m. Kickoff is at 6 p.m. Admission and tailgating is free for everyone. OC Board to meet. The Odessa College Board of Trustees will meet at 6:30 p.m. August 27th in the Wood Health Science Building, 201 West University Boulevard. Some items on the agenda include baseball and softball field updates, review investment policy, list of authorized investment business organizations, conform budget to actual, review a tax calendar, monthly financial statements and budget amendments, informational items, education report, institutional effectiveness report, Vision 2030 Plus update, President's Report, 3430 Reminder, On-Campus Preview Day, and Senior Sunrise. MC approves several strategic plan updates. Student success at Midland College begins with becoming the premier employer in the community. As a result, workplace quality is a key pillar to the college's strategic plan. According to Midland College President Damon Kennedy, "We place a high value in all of our employees and are committed to investing in their growth and well-being." The Midland College Board of Trustees has approved several key updates to employee compensation and benefits to enhance work-life balance for the college's faculty and staff. "One of our primary goals was to create flexibility in schedules throughout the college, as well as create perks such as free tuition for families," Kennedy said in a news release. Among the most significant updates is the adoption of a 36-hour workweek. Beginning the week of August 26th, MC's administrative offices will operate on a modified schedule. Offices will open Monday through Thursday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and on Fridays from 8 a.m. to noon. This streamlined work week is intended to provide employees with a better work-life balance while maintaining robust services for students. The new hours do not affect Helen L. Greathouse Children's Center or Pre-K Academy at Midland College. Another enhancement is the expanded scholarship opportunities for full-time employees and their dependents, who are now eligible for full tuition scholarships, excluding fees, textbooks, or materials, up to 15 credit hours. Encore to donate $650,000 to volunteer fire departments. West Odessa Greenwood to benefit from gift. The Encore Cares Foundation will donate $650,000 to three volunteer fire departments in West Texas on Tuesday, which will help support their budgets and allow them to continue serving their respective areas. The West Odessa, Greenwood, and Northeast Midland County Volunteer Fire Departments will meet with Senior Vice President Debbie Dennis on Tuesday at 11 a.m. at the Northeast Midland County Volunteer Fire Department, 5310 East County Road 60 in Midland. It felt good knowing there's somebody out there wanting to put their name in the hat and give us a break, West Odessa Fire Chief Austin Hardin said. Encore Electric Delivery Company created the Encore Cares Foundation to expand giving and support for the communities the company serves. The money will go toward upkeep on vehicles and equipment, Hardin said. In July, the department, consisting entirely of volunteers, responded to more than 100 calls for service. While the department receives funds from Ector County, it only supports part of their operation costs, Hardin said. The department received $54,000 for the 2023-2024 fiscal year and held a fundraiser in March to help raise additional funds. In addition to responding to fires, the West Odessa Volunteer Fire Department assists Odessa Fire Rescue, the Ector County Sheriff's Department, the Odessa Police Department, and the University of Texas of the Permian Basin Police Department with their certified unmanned aerial aircraft operators. Hardin expects the number of calls to service to continue rising. If we didn't have good operational equipment, we wouldn't be able to efficiently respond and to supply people with whatever help they need, he said. Hardin added that volunteer fire departments are typically the first to be on the scene of fires in most areas around the state. The Smokehouse Creek Fire, the largest in Texas history, burned more than 1 million acres. The first responders who arrived on scene were members of the local volunteer fire department, he added. Hardin said volunteers can be the difference in the outcome of a blaze. It's what we do, Hardin said. If not us, then who? We enjoy spending the time preparing to protect our community. County holding tax rate public hearing. The Ector County Commissioner's Court on Tuesday will discuss a number of items, including appointing a new constable in Precinct 1 and hiring an environmental investigator. The court will also hold a public hearing on the tax rate and proposed budget. Commissioners will also discuss holding the month of September as the official library card sign-up month, with the American Library Association, ALA, has been holding since 1987 to ensure every child in the county has their own library card. Approve the updated Ector County Commissioner's Court schedule for the 2024-2025 term. Take any necessary action regarding a request from Mauricio Navarro to use the Ector County Health Department parking lot for the Dia de los Muertos Parade and Festival, October 19th. Discuss appointing James Westcarta as constable for Precinct 1. Discuss Meteor Crater Friends Incorporated board appointments. Discuss Ector County Parks and Recreational Master Plan Steering Committee board member appointments. Discuss the proposed purchase of the Amigos bonding property. Discuss awarding Park Hill as Ector County's owner's representative of the Ector County Courthouse Design Build project. Discuss rejecting a proposal for the Coliseum concessionaire. Discuss a bid award, road construction materials testing by SKG Engineering. Discuss a proposal specs for a security fence for the courthouse, discuss a request for proposal specs for oil and gas lease 3, discuss a request for proposal specs for ECUD water lines using ARPA federal funds. These specifications were developed by approved engineer Kim Lee Horn and are ready to advertise and distribute to vendors upon approval from the Commissioner's Court. Discuss Summit Food Service Agreement between the Ector County Adult and Juvenile Detention Centers and Summit Food Service, LLC, for Micro Market Good to Go. Discussing engagement letter for Ector County's fiscal year 2024 independent audit. Discuss a renewal agreement by and between Ector County and Health and Human Services, Medicaid Administrative Claims, MAC. Discuss the creation and hiring of an environmental investigator for the Ector County Environmental Enforcement Department. Hold a public hearing on the proposed budget for fiscal year 2024-2025. Hold a public hearing on the proposed tax rate for the fiscal year 2024-2025 budget. Adopt the fiscal year 2024-2025 ad valorem tax rate. Water on Council Agenda Tuesday. The Bob Darrington Water Reclamation Plant and the City's Water Treatment Plant will be major discussion topics for the Odessa City Council Tuesday night. The Council will be asked to approve a contract of just under $3 million for Truen Construction and Engineering to replace safety fencing and railings, replace damaged stairs and sidewalks, replace two overhead cranes, and make improvements to the grit removal system. In addition, Assistant Director of Utilities Alex Rowlett would like the Council to spend just under $207,000 to rebuild a bar screen that cleans debris out of wastewater as it comes into the plant. According to materials provided to the Council, the plant has two bar screens, but one isn't operational and is causing a heavier strain on the one that does work. According to Rowlett, Parkson Corporation is the only company that can supply parts for the bar, and they provided a quote of $206,817 for the parts and an on-site rebuild. The rebuild was not part of the utilities department budget, so the money would come from the city's general fund. Rowlett also wants to purchase an $80,000 backup pump and motor that will allow the Darrington plant to continue to provide reuse water should the existing pump and motor fail. As far as the water treatment plant, Rowlett will ask the City Council for $1 million in contingency funds for the ongoing rehab project. Since January 2022, contractors have been upgrading and rehabbing the plant. According to Rowlett, contractors need to install 4 line stops and replace 3 valves before draining a tank. The cost of the additional work is $1,881,254, of which only $881,000 is budgeted. According to materials provided to the Council, time is of essence because they want to do the work during the cooler months when water usage is down. Rowlett has assumed the duties of Kevin Niles, who resigned earlier this month after roughly 13 months with the city. Niles offered several weeks' notice. In other matters, the Council will hold a public hearing on the city's proposed fiscal year 24-25 budget. According to materials provided to the Council, the city's total financing sources come to $546,875,114, and total expenditures amount to $305,193,877. Approve the Odessa Development Corporation's fiscal year 24-25 budget. According to materials provided to the city, the ODC has budgeted $12,650,000 in total revenue for next year and $53,141,828 in total expenditures. It's starting out the year with a fund balance of $89,585,900. According to ODC members, they intend to provide the city $30 million for infrastructure needs. Approved contracts ODC has made with the Odessa Chamber of Commerce Economic Development Division, Current Media, Odessa Black Chamber of Commerce, UTPB Small Business Development Center, MOTRAN, and City of Odessa. Consider Parks and Recreation Director Max Reyes' request to reject recent bids to replace the pond liner at Comanche Trail Park. He'd like to add a 6-foot safety barrier around the east side of the pond near the walking trail. During the council's work session, which begins at 3 p.m., the council will discuss an insurance claim filed on Behavior of Image, Inc. for roof damage caused by the 4th of July celebrations fireworks. Discuss giving City Manager John Beckmeyer permission to write a letter to Ector County agreeing to the annexation of 263 acres near Grandview and Yukon. Get an update on ongoing and upcoming road, water, and sewer infrastructure projects from Assistant City Manager Christina Burns. Mental Health Awareness Topic of Neighborhood Watch Meeting. The Odessa Police Department will have its monthly Neighborhood Watch Meeting at 7 p.m. August 27th in the OPD Training Facility located at 210 North Lincoln. This month's topic will be mental health awareness and will feature a presentation from Permia Care. OPD Sergeant Lindsay Weichoff will also be a guest speaker. Pfluger invites high school students to apply for Congressional Youth Advisory Council. U.S. Representative August Pfluger announced the relaunch of the Congressional Youth Advisory Council, CYAC, for high school juniors and seniors in the 11th Congressional District of Texas. This esteemed program offers a unique opportunity for passionate and driven young leaders to engage with government, collaborate with peers, and serve their communities. The CYAC is designed to empower the next generation of leaders by providing a platform to voice their perspectives on critical issues. Participants will have the chance to interact directly with Congressman August Pfluger, special guests, and senior staff members in up to 4 interactive virtual meetings. Additionally, CYAC participants will be provided special admittance to the Pfluger Youth Leadership Conference in spring 2025, date to be determined. I am thrilled to invite motivated high school students to be part of the Congressional Youth Advisory Council, Pfluger said in a news release. Our mission is to empower students to speak out and affect positive change in their communities and government. This program aims to foster dialogue, encourage civic engagement, and empower our youth to make a meaningful impact in our communities. Key program details. Up to 4 interactive virtual meetings with Congressman Pfluger and distinguished guests. Participation in the Pfluger Youth Leadership Conference in spring 2025, date to be determined. No cost to participants, all materials provided, possibility of academic or community service credit. Interested students are encouraged to apply by completing an application at pfluger.house.gov/services/cyac.htm. The deadline for submission is September 13, 2024. Applicants must commit to attending a minimum of 3 meetings scheduled after school hours, subject to possible changes in the congressional calendar. For questions about the program or application, contact Corbett Padilla in the Midland District Office at 432-687-2390. Man arrested on rape charge. An Edinburgh man was arrested Friday after being accused of raping a woman who thought he was her friend. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers were dispatched to the 3700 block of Andrews Highway about a disturbance, and when police arrived, a woman told them she'd been sexually assaulted by Walter George Gordon, 42. The woman said she and Gordon went out for a few drinks after he'd been released from the Ector County Jail, and she agreed to allow him to stay the night, the report stated. Once they got home, the woman said Gordon took a shower and he attacked her when she went to check on him, the report stated. According to the report, the woman told police she unsuccessfully tried to fight him off by biting, scratching, and kicking him, and officers observed scratches and marks that corroborated the woman's claims. Gordon, who had been in jail on a misdemeanor theft charge, claimed the sex was consensual. However, he refused to give a statement, the report stated. He was booked back into the jail on suspicion of sexual assault, a second-degree felony, and a $50,000 surety bond. New standards could be coming for bars, restaurants. Local bar and restaurant owners will soon be invited to a town hall to discuss potential changes to the permitting process and city ordinances governing their businesses. Odessa Planning Director Elizabeth Shaughnessy said the city is moving from a small urban setting to a more mid-range setting, so she and the rest of the city's planners are trying to prepare for it the best they can. That means everything from creating regulations that ensure new bars and restaurants aren't too close to churches and schools, to creating streamlined permitting processes, to creating uniform safety standards. Strategic Development and Policy Manager Jeff Fisher said staff has been visiting local bars and restaurants and establishments in Abilene, Lubbock, Amarillo, San Angelo, and Midland since last November. Staff was tasked with looking into some design standards and security and safety in all of Odessa, so it would apply across the city. And really, we are looking at the overall good for the city, what's going to bring businesses downtown, what's going to attract economic growth, what's going to make people feel safe and secure at night when they go to a bar or a restaurant, any place that sells alcohol for on-site consumption, Fisher said. What they discovered is that most bars and restaurants are well-lit, have security cameras and security personnel on hand, but staff would like the city council to consider giving those who aren't as safety-conscious or new business owners an incentive to participate in the crime prevention through environmental design program, which requires things like good lighting, cameras, and security, Fisher said. If they do so, perhaps they could get a break on certain permitting fees, Fisher said. In addition, staff would like the council to think about issuing notices of violation or suspending business licenses for 60 days for minor infractions or suspending them for up to 120 days for such things as shootings or stabbings, Fisher said, told the council during a recent council workshop. The council might also consider requiring bars and restaurants to hide their garbage dumpsters, keep their sidewalks free and clear, and their windows transparent, Fisher said. When visiting the other cities, Fisher said they looked at their permitting processes and ordinances and discovered a wide variety. One of the cities, basically in East Texas, actually regulated the number of bars per district or per square mile. We thought that was probably a little overzealous because then you've essentially are telling people you can't have a bar at all and we don't want to go that far, Fisher said. Some cities require business owners to obtain specific use permits by going through a long process with planning and zoning, and the city council when they start out, and then every 2 years. Others shave off time by simply requiring them to go to staff for a site plan review. Right now, Fisher told the council, once a bar or restaurant gets the necessary permits, which are good for 2 years, there's really no enforcement and there's no site plan criteria or safety standards that are really in place in between that time. So this is somewhat how certain things may happen. We want to try to prevent that. The whole goal is to try to make the process easier while ensuring design standards and safety standards are being met, he said. In the first couple of months, Fisher said staff will discuss their ideas with planning and zoning and schedule a town hall. Once they have put more input from local business owners, they'll again go to planning and zoning before taking their proposals to the city council. He doesn't believe the suggestions made by staff thus far are too onerous. There are not things that are intended to be overzealous or over-regulatory. They're just common sense kind of standards, and they would be things that would fit into a mid-sized West Texas climate like Odessa, Fisher said. They're not something to be overreaching, but also to do nothing would probably not be best practice. So we're hoping to find middle ground and engaging with the public at the town hall, and it will help us get more information. New standards definitely need to be in place as Odessa grows, Fisher said. Our growth has been astronomical. We're getting a lot of the spillover traffic from Midland and other cities that are coming here to work in the oil field. And so I think having sort of these standards now, as we continue to grow, will make it better for bars and restaurants, he said. He again stressed staff wants businesses to succeed, but at the same time ensure they are aesthetically pleasing and safe.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, August 24th. Uptick in oil field service bankruptcy notices. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Oil field service companies in recent years have been buffeted by consolidation among upstream exploration and production companies, higher interest rates, and other issues. For a number of reasons, a number of oil field service companies are starting to have financial problems and resorting to bankruptcy, noted Grant Schwartzwelder, president of OTA Environmental Solutions and host of the Oil Field Strong webinar. He recently hosted John Mitchell, a partner at Katten Muchin Rosenbaum LLP, and a practicing bankruptcy attorney in Texas for the last 28 years. Mitchell agreed that his firm is starting to see a little bit of an uptick in some energy filings, predominantly in the service sector. He cited a report from Reorg Research that 5 energy companies with over $10 million in liabilities filed bankruptcy in July, the most since October 2020, and the most of any other sector outside commercial real estate. Quote, "We're not anywhere close to where we were in 2020, where we had more than 85 filings in a single year. But I don't know if it's a trend yet, but it does appear that there's been an uptick over the last month or two," he said. Schwartzwelder told Mitchell the goal of the webinar was to look at the issue from several perspectives. And the first was what an oil company should do if its service provider, whether to provide pipe or completion services, files for bankruptcy. "The first step is to determine what type of bankruptcy," Mitchell advised. "The two predominant types are Chapter 7, where the company is liquidated, and Chapter 11, where the company undergoes restructuring. In most bankruptcy cases, the key for a customer who is now a creditor of that service company is financial and risk mitigation. Quote, "What you need to be very cautious about is not essentially paying twice," he said. Under the contract, the operator may have an obligation to make a payment, or there is some level of job completion that triggers a progress payment. If the service provider is liquidating, Mitchell said the operator may have to find another company to complete the work. In that case, the operator has the right of set-off in bankruptcy, the right to get back some of those payments against what was owed. Again, he advised, make sure you don't pay twice or overpay, and that you fully offset any damages you have against any obligations you have to the Chapter 7 estate. End quote. Chapter 11 is trickier because the company remains in operation and the operator is still liable for payment of services provided. By law, Mitchell said the operator cannot terminate the contract or hire a replacement company. The debtor company has the right to decide which contracts it wants to keep and which contracts it wants to terminate. If the debtor company wants to keep the contract, Mitchell said the operator has the right to ensure the service provider is able to perform the work. It either has the financial ability or the employees need to fulfill the contract. If the operator believes the provider is unable to fulfill the contract, it can ask the bankruptcy judge to allow it to terminate the contract. Each bankruptcy case is different, Mitchell said, but operators need to look carefully at the cost of pursuing a claim against the bankrupt company versus what could be recovered. For companies considering bankruptcy, the earlier the better, Mitchell said. Quote, "My advice to any distressed company is the earlier your professionals involved, the better. I can't tell you the number of times that I've received a call and it's, hey, John, we've got a problem and I'm bouncing payroll next Tuesday. I need to file Chapter 11. I say, that's great and I'm glad you called me, but simply filing Chapter 11 between now and next Tuesday, you're still going to bounce payroll because there's no slush fund that's created. There's no sudden liquidity available to you," he said. He also advised carefully considering whether the company can continue to operate in the black on a daily basis under Chapter 11. If not, then filing Chapter 7 and liquidating the company might be the better option. Enterprise to acquire Piñon Midstream. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Enterprise Products Partners continued its foray into the acquisition market, agreeing to acquire Piñon Midstream, a portfolio company of Black Bay Energy Capital, for $950 million. Earlier this year, Enterprise acquired equity interest in the Whitethorn pipeline from Western Midstream. Piñon Midstream provides natural gas gathering and treating services in the core of the prolific eastern flank of the Delaware Basin in New Mexico and Texas. Piñon will contribute approximately 50 miles of natural gas gathering and redelivery pipelines, 5 3-stage compressor stations, 270 million cubic feet per day of existing hydrogen sulfide and carbon dioxide treating facilities, with an expansion to 450 MMCFD of capacity expected in the second half of 2025, and 2 of the highest capacity and deepest acid gas injection, or AGI, wells in the basin. Quote, "We are excited to announce the acquisition of Piñon Midstream," said A.J. Jim Teague, co-chief executive officer of Enterprise's general partner, in a statement. Quote, we believe the Piñon management team has developed the premier sour natural gas treating system in the Delaware Basin. These assets accelerate our entry into this region by at least 3 or 4 years. These assets are highly complementary to our midstream energy system and provide us an excellent entry point into the eastern flank of the Delaware Basin for us to expand our natural gas processing footprint. Our entry will provide producers a choice for reliable and value-added processing services, end quote. Enterprise had sold its Val Verde gas plant, which included sour gas treating and acid gas injection facilities, in 2021. As part of the deal with Piñon, Enterprise is evaluating locations for a third acid gas injection well that would support up to 750 MMCFD of total treating capacity. Piñon Midstream also brings with it fee-based contracts with long-term acreage dedications, including minimum volume commitments. The company had also received in June approval from the Environmental Protection Agency for its monitoring, reporting, and verification plan for permanent sequestration of carbon dioxide in its two AGI wells located at its Dark Horse treating facility in Lee County, New Mexico. Enterprise estimates this area of the Delaware Basin, largely comprised of Lee County, New Mexico, and Winkler County, Texas, has more than 7,500 remaining well locations and has access to at least 6 geologic production benches. Drilling activity in this area has generally been restricted due to the lack of sour natural gas treating and acid gas injection well capacity, as well as the lengthy permitting process for acid gas injection wells, which can take up to 2 years. EIA says Permian will again lift U.S. energy output. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Once again, the Permian Basin will provide the lift that sends U.S. crude production up to an average 13.7 million barrels per day and marketed natural gas production to an average of 114.3 billion cubic feet per day in 2025. Quote, most of the forecast growth in oil and natural gas production comes from the Permian, where we expect productivity gains, new and expanded infrastructure, and high crude oil prices will support rising production, the Energy Information Administration wrote in its latest short-term energy outlook. Dean Foreman, chief economist with the Texas Oil and Gas Association, told the Reporter Telegram by email that Permian oil output of 6.3 million barrels per day this year and projected output of 6.6 million barrels a day in 2025, per EIA figures, quote, essentially equals the total U.S. oil production from just 12 years ago, 6.5 million barrels a day in 2012, end quote. Foreman added, quote, for combined domestic oil and natural gas production, the Permian Basin has delivered virtually all of U.S. growth so far this year and is projected to account for two-thirds of growth again in 2025, according to EIA projections, end quote. According to the EIA, since early 2023, the Permian region has had more active rigs than the rest of the lower 48 states and has continued to complete hundreds of wells or prepare them for production each month. In the Permian, the EIA said increased rates of production from new completions are offsetting existing wells production declines and leading to higher crude oil and natural gas output. As of July 2024, newly completed wells in the Permian were producing an average of 433,000 barrels per day in their first full month. Natural gas production from new Permian wells in July 2024 averaged 780 million cubic feet per day. This new well production is more than offsetting the declines in production from existing wells. Foreman wrote, quote, "A new well in the Permian Basin today is initially over 20% more productive than it was a year ago and 11 times more productive than it was in 2012, end quote. The EIA attributed the Permian's growing productivity to Permian operators successfully implementing more advanced drilling and completion techniques, including longer lateral lengths, optimized well spacing, and enhanced fracturing designs. Foreman agreed, writing, quote, "The Permian Basin's productivity gains, rooted in a combination of process and technological advancements, have fundamentally enabled leading production growth while drilling fewer new wells. The optimization of well completions, longer laterals, and better rig steering technology, multi-well pad drilling, sensors, and remote monitoring, and advanced analytics have continued to boost resource recoveries," end quote. He also attributed the success to the Permian Basin's favorable geology, but also its leading business climate, productivity, and infrastructure expansions, which have remained the region's key to success and differentiators from other basins. The EIA forecasts that Permian Basin crude production will increase by 430,000 barrels per day from 2023 to 6.3 million barrels per day in 2024 and 6.6 million barrels per day in 2025. Similarly, the EIA expects marketed natural gas production will rise by 1.9 billion cubic feet per day in 2024 and 1 BCF in 2025 to average 25.8 BCF per day in 2025. Most of the natural gas production in the Permian Basin is associated natural gas and comes from oil-directed wells, the EIA noted, and the agency expects crude oil prices will remain sufficiently high to support growth in crude oil production and associated natural gas production in the region. The Permian is also expected to benefit from additional pipeline capacity, the EIA said. Based on several projects currently under development, the agency expects new pipeline capacity will deliver crude oil and natural gas from the Permian Basin to demand centers and alleviate transportation constraints.
This day in history. Today in history, on August the 21st, 1831, Nat Turner launched a violent slave rebellion in Virginia, resulting in the deaths of at least 55 white people. Scores of black people were killed in retribution in the aftermath of the rebellion, and Turner was later executed. Also on this date, in 1858, the first of seven debates took place between Illinois Senator contenders Abraham Lincoln and Stephen Douglas. In 1911, Leonardo da Vinci's Mona Lisa was stolen from the Louvre Museum in Paris. It was recovered 2 years later in Italy. In 1944, the United States, Britain, the Soviet Union, and China opened talks at Dumbarton Oaks in Washington that helped pave the way for establishment of the United Nations. In 1983, Filipino politician Benigno Aquino Jr. was assassinated as he exited an aircraft at Manila International Airport. His widow, Corazon Aquino, would become president of the Philippines 3 years later. In 1991, a hardline coup against Soviet President Mikhail S. Gorbachev collapsed in the face of a popular uprising led by Russian Federation President Boris N. Yeltsin. In 1992, an 11-day siege began at the cabin of white separatist Randy Weaver in Ruby Ridge, Idaho, as government agents tried to arrest Weaver for failing to appear in court on charges of selling two illegal sawed-off shotguns. On the first day of the siege, Weaver's teenage son Samuel and Deputy U.S. Marshal William DeGane were killed. In 1993, in a serious setback for NASA, engineers lost contact with the Mars Observer spacecraft as it was about to reach the Red Planet on a $980 million mission. In 2000, rescue efforts to reach the sunken Russian nuclear submarine Kursk ended with divers announcing none of the 118 sailors had survived. In 2010, Iranian and Russian engineers began loading fuel into Iran's first nuclear power plant, which Moscow promised to safeguard to prevent material at the site from being used in any potential weapons production. Midland Habitat for Humanity dedicates 196th house. Midland Habitat for Humanity, MHFH, celebrated their latest homeowner, August the 15th, with a dedication of its 196th home in the 500 block on S. Lee Street to the Rayana Reyes family. Braving the brutal West Texas sun, friends, family, and future Habitat homeowners gathered to support the new homeowner. The Warren Charitable Foundation generously provided funding for the build. Pro Petro and Ring Energy provided volunteers to help construct the home. Reyes worked over 250 hours of sweat equity in addition to completing the Habitat's homeowner college program with classes on personal finance, homeowner maintenance, civic engagement, health and wellness, and more. Habitat is incredibly thankful for the Warren Charitable Foundation and their commitment to Habitat and our mission of changing lives through affordable homeownership. We are also so proud of Rayana and the hard work and dedication she showed in getting through our programs. We're thrilled to add another home and family to a growing South Midland neighborhood. Joey Hopkins, MHFH's executive director, said, at the event, Reyes expressed her thankfulness for the Habitat program. This home means more to us than words can express. We are overjoyed to start this new chapter of our lives in a place we can finally call our own. Thank you once again to everyone involved for making this possible for us. Your kindness and support have made a huge, lasting impact in both of our lives that we will never forget. MHFH is one of the premier institutions responsible for constructing affordable housing in the Permian Basin. The organization's partnership model offers deserving, hardworking families a hand up. MHFH uses a rigorous qualifying process that includes progress from the application through homeownership. Each participant contributes a minimum of 250 hours of sweat equity on the worksite and completes a home ownership education program. Successful candidates are then awarded a 0% interest mortgage, making home ownership a reality for some of the most deserving families in the Permian Basin. Anyone interested in supporting MHFH's efforts in the Permian Basin can contact Jeff Myers, Chief of Staff, at 432-686-8877. Or for more information, visit habitatmidland.org or call 432-686-8877. Obituaries. Jose Guadalupe Gonzalez, age 86 of Odessa, Texas, passed away on August the 17th, surrounded by family at his home in Odessa. The visitation will be 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, August the 21st, with a recitation of the Rosary to follow at 6 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, August the 22nd, at St. Mary's Catholic Church, A burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Larry Leon Melton died after a lengthy battle with Parkinson's on August the 19th in Odessa. A celebration of life service will be held at 2 p.m. at First Methodist Odessa on Friday, August the 23rd. Kenneth Edward Williams, age 57, of Odessa, passed away on August the 18th in Odessa, surrounded by family. Visitation will be held at 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Thursday, August the 22nd, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, August the 23rd, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. The burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. John E. Morris of Glendale, Texas, passed away on August the 15th. A celebration of life will be held at the shop in Gardendale on Sunday, September the 1st at 10 a.m. with lunch to follow. Michael Isaiah Sanchez passed away on August the 15th at Houston Methodist Hospital. Visitation for Michael will begin 11 a.m. Wednesday, August the 21st at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Funeral services will be held 1 p.m. Thursday, August the 22nd at the First United Pentecostal Church, with a burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery in the Rose Hills section. Oldest person in the world dies at 117. Maria Brañas, an American-born Spaniard, considered the world's oldest person at 117 years old, has died, her family said on Tuesday. In a post on Brañas' X account, her family wrote in Catalan, "Maria Brañas has left us. She has gone the way she wanted, in her sleep, at peace, and without pain." The Gerontology Research Group, which validates details of people thought to be 110 or older, listed Brañas as the oldest known person in the world after the death of French nun Lucille Randon last year. The next oldest person listed by the Gerontology Research Group is now Japan's Tokimo Itoka, who is 116 years old. Brañas was born in San Francisco on March the 4th, 1907, after living for some years in New Orleans, where her father founded a magazine, her family returned to Spain when she was young. Brañas said that she had memories of crossing the Atlantic Ocean during World War I. Dear Dr. Roach, I recently had a urine analysis done for pain that I usually get from urinary tract infections, UTIs. The results showed that some of the tests were high. My epithelial cell count was 11. My hyaline cast count was 10, and there were both red and white blood cells. There wasn't any bacteria, and the doctor never contacted me, so I am assuming things are okay. The pain subsided after a few days, and now I don't have any. Should I be concerned about these high results? Dr. Roach answers, the finding of elevated white blood cells in the urine of a person with a history of UTIs and recurrent symptoms is suggestive of a urine infection. However, with no bacteria seen, this becomes less likely. Red cells are commonly seen in urine infections, while hyaline casts are not specific. Epithelial cells come from the lining of the urethra and surrounding area, the vulva, in women. It is primarily symptoms that drive the decision to treat a patient, and with your symptoms gone, treatment isn't necessary. You could have cleared a UTI on your own. I would consider retesting the urine, being very careful to clean the surrounding area and let some urine drain before collecting the sample, to make sure that the urinary findings have gone, usually kidney stones, tuberculosis of the kidney, and kidney inflammation can result in these findings. When no infection is found, it is prudent to do further investigation if the white cells remain high without bacteria. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. You can write to him at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida 32853-6475.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.